It's that time again. ESO just dropped their 2024 EMS Index, a must-read benchmarking tool for every EMS agency. With insights from over 12 million EMS responses in 2023, it covers topics like bystander CPR, ambulance offload times, and opioid overdoses. Your free copy is now available at eso.com/EMS-POD.
Welcome to the GEMS Report, brought to you by Clarion Events, Fire and Rescue, and the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. I'm Ted Lee, Editor-in-Chief of GEMS, and along with Jeff Frankel, the Managing Editor of GEMS, we are bringing subject matter experts and industry leaders to talk about hot topics and the news as it refers to and references pre-hospital medicine. Today, I have Catherine West with us, and she just did an article for GEMS that revolves around community paramedic work and follow-up for those providers. So, Ms. West, could you tell us a little bit about your background so our audience knows who you are?
Sure. I'm a nurse by training, worked in the emergency department for a few years before I got into infection control. And long about 1978, I found through search of a literature through the National Library of Medicine, there was nothing on infection control for fire EMS. And so began working on that because it just seemed to make sense that you were part of the healthcare team that needed to have the same perks, let's say, like vaccines,
right?
Prevention measures, little things. So that's how it all started. And I've been working in this field as my specialty field since 1978. And try to keep everybody up to date on what's new and different.
Well, in light of that, your recent article, you know, specifically looks at community paramedic worker mobile integrated health, which of course is a very hot topic now for us. And we have a lot of providers that are providing care in a very different way. So why don't you tee off with, you know, what this article is about and kind of why you thought it was important to bring this to light?
Well, as we know, our personnel are well trained in emergent care. But going into community paramedicine and MIH, we find ourselves with very different practices that we need to perform. Now, there's, as you know, a wide variety of programs out there. And it seemed that there is overall a lack of making sure that our scope of practice reflects the new techniques and procedures that will be performed. And now things are getting even bigger because we're now adopting something called hospital to home. And that's going to involve more acute care than some departments are even offering at this time. That'll make it doing proper infection control practices to prevent patients from getting infections much more important. Now, having said that, bringing up infections, any infection that occurs in a patient 2 days after discharge, I'm sorry, up to 30 days after discharge, CMS, Medicare, Medicaid will not reimburse the hospital for the cost of treating those infections. And that makes this even a bigger issue to make sure that our practices are appropriate. To the article, I had a call about a month ago from a home care situation where a nurse had sustained a contaminated sharps injury and the patient was known to be HIV positive. They had no protocols as to how to follow up this exposure. And so since they didn't, they sent the care provider to the emergency department, where she was started on PEP drugs. No testing of the SORS patient was done. Started on drugs. ED physician never contacted the patient's attending physician. That's who's in charge in home care. It's the patient's attending physician, not an emergency department physician.
Right.
So if they had done that, if they had called the attending physician, he would have informed them that the patient was on treatment, had had viral load tests done 3 weeks earlier, and had no circulating virus. So the whole trip to the ED, generating those costs, going on toxic drugs, was totally unnecessary. And so that was the wake-up call, that post-exposure follow-up is going to be very, very different when we have patients that are not transported to the emergency department, when we're used to transporting SORS patients to the emergency department. And so I started doing some homework to see how we go about obtaining SORS patient testing in the home care environment for a patient that's not being transported. And that was the start of this article.
Yeah. Well, with so much going on and so many departments being unique in the nature of the type of care, like you mentioned, there's a lot of care that's going on out there that we've never done before. We've never dealt with this before. So, you know, to your point, the need for protocols and procedures, you know, in that home setting is really becoming paramount. It's almost like, and of course, this happens a lot of times in EMS, you know, we rush to start providing care and then think about the repercussions after the fact and go, oh, well, we need a policy on this. Oh, we need a procedure. We need, you know, additional training. We need, you know, more support staff for these different things that we might not have been aware of when we started the process. And I think to your point, that's what's going to be something that mobile integrated healthcare providers and services that come up to speed with this will be rapidly adapting to as the care model changes so quickly.
But scope of practice is their protection mm-hmm. for the procedures that they're going to be doing. And so the medical directors have to work with the state legislatures to make sure that scope of practice covers all of the new procedures that they're going to be involved in performing. Yeah. And from what I could find, only about 16 states have done that. And I think we have more than 16 that are starting these programs because, as we all know, there's really a need for them. Right. And it's growing every single day. And people are so well-intentioned, but sometimes not well-informed when we're jumping into something new.
Right. And that's usually the case, you know, as we have new procedures, new equipment coming up or new services that we're trying to provide to our communities. Again, sometimes, you know, the cart gets put before the horse and then we figure out after the fact or we have something happen to say, oh, well, we can't allow this to happen again. We need to have a policy for this. We need to have a procedure in dealing with this. So, you know, what do you think this is going to do, you know, to the future? You say 16 states. We know that there are more states working on, you know, mobile integrated health or community paramedicine in some form or fashion. And it all revolves around, you know, community needs and their needs assessment and kind of what their resources are, because, you know, New York is going to be very different than rural Kansas, you know, or, you know, rural Alabama. But the need is still there to make sure that, you know, the providers are safe, the patients are safe, and that the things that are going on in the house, you know, are medically sound. To your point, you know, medical directors have to be involved with this. But, you know, where do you see this going with each state being so different? And, you know, how providers have a scope of practice in the state, whether it be mandated through their state office of EMS or it's in their legislature. Where do you see this going?
Well, I think there needs to be more consistency in the programs and in the training programs. And as I found, infection control was not even addressed, wasn't being addressed in any of the search of the literature. So that I found rather concerning, because infection control protects not just patients, but also care providers. So here in this instance, it was an unfortunate situation, but we learn, as you said, and we want to see what we can do to not have that happen again. How do we obtain source patient testing in a patient that is not going to be transported? That was the question.
Well, you mentioned in two different aspects. One, the patient's primary physician who's following them. And then, you know, the medical director for the provider, you know, or the ER physician. You know, those are three very different ones. In a very rural area, it might be the same person, but that's not always the case. How do you think we could get, you know, those entities working together more efficiently?
I think that we need to step outside the box.
Okay.
Okay. I had someone say to me once, and it stuck in my brain, that this work discipline knows what it needs to have. Okay. When you were just delivering fire suppression, that was true. You've stepped into now the world of healthcare, and the rules are very different. And I think that subject matter experts from the topic of infection control and personal protection need to have a seat at the table. They need to be part of the process. And right now, I haven't seen that.
Right. Well, along those lines, I mean, bringing those experts in, and you mentioned a lack of perceived education or training in this area, specifically towards, you know, the mobile integrated health or community paramedic realm. Where do you see that education coming from? Is that something that is going to be after somebody comes into one of those positions? Or do you think this should be, you know, part of the scope and the education of a paramedic in general?
Well, number one, education is still a little bit problematic on this topic of infection control. Most departments across the country are not in line with even the OSHA requirements as to what is to be taught in new hire training. Big, big mistake. I travel across the country working with departments, and I find that many don't even know what body fluids pose risk for transmission and which ones do not. I mean, very basic training.
Right.
And I've always been a believer that the more information you have about the diseases, about prevention, the more comfortable you can be in the work environment, which benefits not only the care provider, but the patient as well.
Of course. And, you know, this is a very different, well, sort of different environment. You know, while EMS and, you know, whether it be, you know, hospital-based EMS or fire-based EMS or, you know, your county services or private, because they're going into a home, they think, oh, well, this is just like 911. But it is quite different. And, you know, the level of care that's being provided, the level of interaction is quite different. And then, of course, the point that you made before, should anything happen in the typical 911 realm, we're delivering the patient to the hospital. We have a policy procedure that is handled there. But when the patient is staying home, and that's the whole intent of you know, mobile integrated health and, you know, community paramedicine, keeping patients safely at home, that changes the dynamic quite a bit.
Yes. So everybody is proficient in starting an IV in the field. How do you take care of an indwelling IV site in the home? Totally right. Different. All right. People know how to stop bleeding and put on a dressing. Okay. How do you care? How do you handle a post-op surgical wound dressing in the home care situation? One of my favorite things of non-compliance is where urinary catheter drainage bags are placed during transport.
Right.
On the patient's abdomen, on the stretcher, with the tubing hanging down. Okay. That's not good. Urine backs up, sets the patient up for urinary tract infection. So we haven't conquered that yet, but now in the home, we have to make sure that that is properly hung. And how do you do that if the patient's in a wheelchair?
Right.
What's the procedure? So it's very different. And we need to have the people in charge have a really clear awareness of this and then bring it into training.
Right. Well, like we said, you know, just as much as it's similar, it is quite different. And the implications of, you know, to your point with the IV, starting an IV and then turning somebody over to the hospital in 20 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever your transport time is very different than, you know, caring for that indwelling catheter that's staying at home and your next visit is, you know, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, you know, away. And you're responsible for making sure that, you know, that is clean and that the patient is protecting it as best they can as well. So, you know, it is very, as much as it's very similar, we're walking into somebody's house, the implications are very, very different for this line of work.
Because this also includes patient and family education, because family may be doing the care when you're not there. If you're not coming back for a few days, you need to make sure that they have an understanding of how things should be done, and you're training them to handle that properly.
Yes. And one more added aspect of it, you know, because that's stuff that's not really covered in, you know, the standard paramedic education, you know, family education or even long-term patient education. So very relevant topic, very interesting. Thank you for writing the article. We very much appreciate it and, you know, look forward to more from you on this topic and other topics, you know, revolving around infection control.
Well, I'm happy to help.
Well, thank you very much. It was nice having you.
Thanks. I enjoyed participating. Let's do it again.